My name's Andrew Boyd. I'm the physical activity and lifestyle clinical champion at the RCGP. And I'm joined today by Chris Lynch, who's a lived experience advisor for Equally Well.
Hi.
And Emma Bailey from the Centre for Mental Health, who manages the Equally Well programme.
Hello.
So thank you both very much for being here today. And what I'd really like to start off with is just by asking you, Emma, just to describe what Equally Well is and why it is.
So going back to the very start of Equally Well, it was developed by a lady who actually used to work at Centre for Mental Health called Helen Lockett. She moved over to New Zealand and decided that something had to be done about the mortality gap and created Equally Well. Through talks with Andy Bell, who she worked closely with, he decided that we needed an Equally Well in the UK. But mirroring that, alongside that, we had the Academy of Royal Colleges launched a report, which we went to the launch and we were like, this is absolutely fantastic. Found out they were doing very similar views as well on wanting to do something to change the mortality gap and help people with severe mental illness. And then we also had the five-year forward view that came out. So with all those three things that happened, we realised we really did need to do something, and there was enough people speaking about it to bring together and create a collaboration and call it Equally Well, mirroring image, a fantastic initiative that's already been done in New Zealand. And so the centre lead on that, working alongside the Royal Colleges, Rethink and Kaleidoscope, and we have a fantastic group of lived experience people who we meet with and have some absolutely brilliant discussions. And then also the clinical advisory group as well, who equally have brilliant discussions. I must admit, sometimes I sit there thinking, wow, I did not know about that. And then we also have a growing membership of organisations across the UK that are coming together, all signing a pledge and saying what they will do to help change.
So this is something of a movement, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's been a momentum towards it. But you talked about the mortality gap. Could you talk a little bit more about that? So what's Equally Well trying to achieve? What's its kind of its USP, I suppose?
Yeah, of course. So as a sort of backstop slightly, I worked with Centre for Mental Health. One of the things that we focus on is inequalities and injustice within mental health, and having and hearing about how people with severe mental illness can die 15 to 20 years earlier just based on having quite simple things that could be done being missed. So things like diabetes or cancer not being picked up. We just thought something needs to change about this. So it's the focus around the people with severe mental illness that generally they're getting their mental illness focused on, but then all the health checks and all the sort of physical activity and gaining weight through medication isn't being picked up as much as it should be.
Yeah, and I think as a GP, I'm aware that there is that gap, although 15 years just sounds shocking. I mean,
yeah,
that's like the difference to the life expectancy that people would have had in the 1950s, perhaps. I mean, it's pretty shocking, but it is often difficult to know how to address that.
It's
that
a very difficult conversation to have. I definitely feel for GPs when they're in a room with one of their patients who's been put on a high dose of medication and they're obviously putting on weight. How do you then address that with them? Of how can we help you? How can we change that? It's not an easy conversation to have.
So you've been having conversations with professional groups, with patients who have been through the system. We're going to bring in Chris in a minute to talk about that. But what are the kind of things that Equally Well are hoping to achieve, and how are you going to achieve those things?
So our priorities this year are tobacco smoking and healthy weight management. We came about these through a really great meeting with the clinical advisory group, where we were talking about some of the biggest sort of inequalities within this area. And then we took those topics, which sounded very different at the time, to the lived experience group and asked them what they thought, and what titles, and that we found incredibly important, because calling something like a title of obesity is stigmatizing. It's not something you want to turn around and broach or talk about. And it's not often not the patient's fault in the slightest. So adding a stigma label. So we talked about the different topics. Tobacco smoking was raised, where they said, if you're calling it just smoking, that could be a number of other things. And so we came up with that. And then the healthy weight management, it was discussed that some people have actually lost weight. Some people aren't in the obesity bracket, but they are still, they've still gained 2 stone. So for them not to be able to access the help, so we decided on healthy weight management as a whole. So those are our priorities for this year. But obviously there will be other factors that will come in throughout the year that we'll work with members on.
So you're hoping the program is going to continue to roll and grow?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. We'll come back and talk a bit more about how GPs can access the resources that you've developed in a minute. But I'd like to turn to you now, Chris. So what are your thoughts about what Emma said, and having lived with a mental health condition for a long time, what are your experiences of working, of kind of navigating the NHS, I suppose, when things have been particularly hard?
I'm really behind Equally Well UK, because I think it's so important. I've used services primary and secondary on and off for about 30 years, and sort of grown up in the 80s, I had physical health problems as a child, and it very much seemed that every effort and a big sense of urgency was to get to the bottom of things. And when lots of things were eliminated, it seemed that, oh, it's mental health. And it very much, that sense of urgency dropped. I didn't get as much help, support and treatment. And it kind of just let slide. Whereas I think if those were physical things, it would have been addressed a lot earlier. And I think a lot has changed then. You know, there are conversations in the public that you wouldn't have then. And we're moving forward. But I still think that care is very much fragmented. You have this problem, you go there. And if it's very much you feel like you're on a pathway. I've got that, so I do that, and I go there, and they don't cross over. So that if you're on a pathway for cancer or for any physical health problem, there's no mental health element. You then have to, oh, you can go and see them, and you start completely separately. And for me, I think that kind of needs to be more joined up. I find myself in a system now where the overwhelming majority of people in it are trying to help me. And it's more that the system isn't working than the people in it. And you can see the frustration, the burnout. And I think that's something that with Equally Well and others sort of targeting them together, I think it will make great inroads.
I think it's really interesting. I think it's really important that we recognise that there has been a lot of progress made. You're absolutely right that conversations are happening from celebrities down, celebrities up, about this agenda. Whereas, you know, in the 80s, I think it was very stigmatised. And even in my time, relatively limited time as a GP, you know, I've certainly seen progress. It sounds like the will is there, but it's the system that needs to change to accommodate that. I think the classic example that I've seen, and perhaps you can reflect on this, is when mental health services themselves won't push back on referrals for people who are abusing substances. And I've certainly had patients who have been in a very difficult position when they turn to alcohol or drugs, typically, because their mental health got so bad. And then the mental health services are reluctant to see them until they're sober or clean.
Completely. I've had it where I can't start therapy until I stop using substances. Mm. And it's, well, if I could stop using, I wouldn't need those services. And it's that I don't think in the past I wouldn't technically say I'd have a drink or a drugs problem. I've always had a mental health problem. And my way of coping was with drink and drugs and with help with that problem. And when I've had help with that problem, I've stopped using them. And I think that's where we need to get to.
And so how can an approach like Equally Well, which obviously aims to narrow that gap, how do you think it could best help people like yourself?
I think for me, it's bringing everyone involved together and having those conversations and thinking about how we're going to work together in the future, not just thinking, you know, we're this part of it, getting out of the silos. Yeah. And, you know, the lots of parts of the NHS are looking after the same people, but in completely separate ways. They're not sharing the notes, they're not sharing anything. And a bit more of a joined up approach, I think, would work. And also, and it's not just about the NHS. The NHS can't be everything to everyone. You know, that you might, if even if you're a community mental health team, you know, the average person sees their team 1.4 times a month. But it's really working in the communities. And I think with stuff coming from the long-term plan, it's the community and the voluntary sector and joining up the social care and the physical and the mental health care, you know, all together, that's going to be the only way we can in the future.
And what sort of things have worked for you in terms of making sure that your physical health is as good as possible when you've been carrying a mental health problem with you? What's been particularly successful for you?
I think the biggest thing for me, sort of about 10 years ago, was finding out about peer support. That peer support is just support from people who've been through similar things as you, in this case, sort of mental health problems. And only ever having sort of 10 minutes with an appointment here, or 30 minutes with a nurse, or, you know, an hour with, you know, a psychiatrist if you were lucky, you never get to have those everyday conversations. You're always talking about your medication, or, you know, your care plan if you're lucky enough to get one,
or the referral that was missed or got lost and now you're back at the start.
And that peer support's a chance, you know, to spend as long as you want just talking to people about the everyday things and how it's affected mental health, has affected and impacted on your life, and, you know, the ways through the system and sharing experiences. And there's lots of stuff that I can talk about now that, you know, were so raw and emotional that I would have been in tears and upset that those first few times. So for me, going to a peer support group gave me an emotional understanding and emotional vocabulary to express myself in a way that I never could. And that's from spending, you know, hours and days with my peers that the professionals would love to spend all the time in the world, but the system's not going to work like that. So for me, it's having the clinical support when I need it, but then accessing the peer support. And we talk about, you know, mental health peer support groups, but they don't just help with mental health. You know, they can be around mental health, but and it's not one thing, mental health and physical health. And when I get help, so I'm better with my mental health, I start looking after my physical health, you know, diet, exercise. It's not that I don't know they're good for me, it's just I'm not in a good enough place. And I don't use the term lightly, but when I'm not well, it feels like very disabling. And that sort of support, you know, helps me get mentally and physically better at the same time.
I'm sure most people listening to this podcast will be able to identify, if they haven't got a mental health diagnosis, will be able to identify and agree that, you know, that to separate physical and mental health really is a false dichotomy, isn't it? And all of us know that when we're stressed, when we're struggling, other aspects of our lives also slip away. Thank you so much, Chris. Emma, so turning to you, so Chris has talked about the fact there's a will now, and it does feel like that, doesn't it? It feels like there's a sort of momentum and a kind of a wave of enthusiasm to support this kind of agenda. What specifically could, you know, GPs particularly, because that's who our audience is today, benefit from in terms of the Equally Well programme?
So we've got the Royal College of GPs are one of the key members, one of the founding members, and through that we can have GPs come to us for if they would like to write blogs, if they would like to be part of a podcast, but also if they'd like to attend our events or access information. I do a monthly newsletter, which basically is me pestering members constantly in order for them to share information of what they're doing, because the key thing is creating a network where we share best practice or even things that don't work very well. So I think if you say this didn't work, someone else might say, oh, I tried it this way and it did. So it's just helping each other and creating sort of a drive force of fantastic information, so to say.
and that network, is there a kind of portal where GPs can go onto? Is there a web page where people can go and find some of the fantastic stuff that you're talking about?
So we've got equallywell.co.uk website, which I manage, and I basically add in the resources that our members have got. Quite a few of our members will send me what they've been doing, or one of us will come across it and think, oh, this has to be on the website. So we're trying to create it as a wealth of information for people to come and access. But we're also working on our own things as well. Through the clinical advisory group, we've also got a DASI fellow as well. So through all of that, we're building on some work to be able to put resources out there to help people.
Okay. And any particular kind of top tips for a GP who kind of wanted to, who thought, yeah, this is really important, and actually I do want to kind of make, I want to do something a bit extra for my patients who have got mental health problems. Any kind of quick top tips that they could start to implement on the back of today's podcast, for example?
Okay, so some sort of very quick top tips are to ensure that you discuss the physical health with all of your patients who have severe mental illness at least once a year, preferably more, although we understand it's difficult. And also to check for conditions such as diabetes and heart disease. Then also, when someone's first diagnosed, pay particular attention to physical health risks. Ask them about smoking, alcohol, diet, exercise. Think about social prescribing options for them, areas within physical health, exercise, for people with severe mental illness, but also make sure anyone with SMI who wants help to quit smoking gets effective and tailored support. If someone with a severe mental illness complains about their physical health symptoms, always take them seriously.
Mm. And that really goes back to what Chris said, didn't he? He said, you know, actually he, because things have been separated into physical problems and they've been investigated sort of ad nauseum, and then eventually he was kind of given a mental health diagnosis, you were given a mental health diagnosis, and the two sort of weren't considered together. And I think GP is, although, you know, my colleagues and I are pressed for time, we're very well placed as that first relatively easy point of contact to ask those questions.
And we have also had GPs that have said to us that they've noticed they've put a patient on medication and they've noticed that due to the medication they're putting on weight. And it's that tricky thing of how do you broach the subject with them on, are you having physical activity, what diet are you on, and just having that sort of conversation with them. It's a really tricky one to have.
Thanks, Emma. So Chris, just going back to you for the last section of the podcast, firstly, what do you think about what Emma said, and do you think they're realistic things to ask primary healthcare teams to do? Do you think they're achievable? Do you think they're going to make a difference?
Yeah, I really think they do. And I think one thing sort of for me, and it's been proven with recent evidence, is that sort of continuity, particularly around mental health, that wherever you possibly can, is sort of start being able to see the same GP. There's been big differences in the past that, you know, when I found a GP that I've got on with, that's got me, and that kind of, not expecting to remember everything, but when I come in, oh, Chris, how are you doing? So I can carry on from where we left off, rather than we had three surgeries that merged into super surgery. And when I go and see someone now, it takes me almost a whole appointment to tell them where I'm coming from. So for me, that, you know, I think it's just building up that trust. Seeing the same GP or one of two GPs can have such a phenomenal difference wherever possible. And then you can broach those topics, you know, in an easier fashion than perhaps if it was just someone new, and especially with people that might not trust the system because of past negative experiences, you know, that it's trying to regain that trust.
Yeah. I think the super surgeries is a really important thing to consider, because part of the new contract, which does bring in social prescribing as an important element, and both of you have touched on that, and I think it very much fits with the equally well approach and the peer-to-peer support that you've mentioned, but there is that risk that you might lose further continuity of care. I think that's something that GP teams need to be aware of. And I'm going back to some of the things, some of those difficult conversations that or potentially difficult conversations that Emma mentioned about. I mean, have you ever been offended when a healthcare professional has asked you about, you know, weight or smoking or physical activity or diet, or do you actually welcome those?
I genuinely welcome that someone's taken an interest and care in my health and my well-being. So I would just ask people, you know, just to say that you're not going to offend anyone. I'd be more concerned if they weren't, you know, if I'd put on 4 stone since last time I saw them, and it's like they haven't even picked up on that. Like, what's the point?
Yeah, I think that's really important message, isn't it? That actually, and the evidence says that patients on the whole are never offended by a non-judgmental inquiry about your health, whatever that looks like. And it does show that they've taken an interest and want to do something to help. And someone's just sowing that seed and saying, looks like you don't look as well as when I last saw you. That can be enough to kind of get the ball rolling. Sounds like Equally Well, you know, has got some real potential to do some great things, and hopefully through that kind of network and that peer-to-peer, both for patients but also peer-to-peer for GPs and their teams, because actually just like anyone else, we learn best from our peers as well, like you said, Chris. Where would you hope in your kind of, you know, in a kind of ideal world we would be in, you know, in an ideal but realistic world, perhaps we'd be in 4 or 5 years time, what would have changed from now and would make what can be a very difficult time for someone with a mental health problem a bit easier down the line?
I think I'd like to see in, you know, 4 or 5 years time that lots of the stuff that was in the 5-year forward view, you know, really coming into fruition. You know, that everyone can access peer support through every fluctuating state, you know, in crisis recovery and managing well, that every service should be co-produced, that peer support workers should be part of every multidisciplinary team. And then starting, you know, those first few years of the long-term plan, that sort of blurring that distinction between primary and secondary care, that, you know, primary care has sort of inreach from what's conventionally now secondary services. You know, so you don't have to reach, you know, these line, you know,
like an arbitrary threshold sort of thing.
You've got to be that ill to get that. So, you know, we really get that help right in the community, in that sort of that real place-based care, and that even that in itself is working alongside, you know, health, social care and the community and you know, the voluntary sector, and that you will go and you won't be seen for your physical health or your mental health. You're just, it'll be about your well-being as a whole. Yeah.
Can we achieve that, Emma?
I think that's the aim. ideally, that would be absolutely fantastic. And I think we've got a lot of the big organisations, NHS England, Public Health England, Royal College GPs, signed up, and we're all going for the same aim. So that's the goal.
So now we need GPs on the ground to really take the reins and run with it.
Definitely.
Great. Thank you both very much.